Hey, this is Larry the Cable Guy. You are listening to Hope for the Caregivers with Peter Rosenberg. And if you're not listening to it, you're a communist. Get it done.
Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver. I am Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a family caregiver. We're glad to have you with us. Part of what I like to do on this show is to introduce you to people and stories that I find inspiring and insightful. I maintain that while we do our task as caregivers, and those things can be unique, the issues we struggle with in our hearts are common to the human condition: fear, obligation, guilt, remorse, resentment, despair. All of those things are common to the human condition. And so that said, I look for individuals who have faced those things and lived to write about it and learn from them. And one of those individuals is with me today. He may be the most recognizable guy in the entire entertainment business. And that is William Lee Golden of the Oak Ridge Boys. He joined the group in 1965. He's got a new book out called Behind the Beard, the autobiography. Now, in honor of him coming on today, I just didn't shave. But it does. I'm glad to have you with us, William Lee, and I appreciate you very much being with me today.
Peter, it's great to be with you, and I commend you on great work you do to help families that need help.
Well,
thank you, sir.
Well, we cover a lot of territory in this show. We deal with folks who are taking care of special needs children. We deal with folks who are taking care of aging parents and folks who are dealing with alcoholics and addicts, or people, in my case, my wife, who had a traumatic event back. Actually, you probably know where this is. You've been on the road so many times, right there at the Paris Camden exit off of I-40 towards West Tennessee. Back in 83, she had this terrible wreck, and they took her over to Benton County. And they couldn't do anything with her. And they immediately got her to Nashville and brought her to St. Thomas there. That's where most of the work was done to help put her back together. So our journey in Tennessee was a long journey there, medically speaking. But I got your book on Monday, and I read through the entire thing. And it was, I finished it late that night. And I was really quite moved by some things, William Lee. And I wanted to talk with you about it. I've read a lot of biographies and autobiographies in my life. And this one was unlike any that I'd ever read. It felt more like a letter from a family member and friend who said, hey, here's some things that need to be said, some things that I felt like you would want me to say to you. And there was no self-aggrandizing. There was no axe to grind. It was real matter of fact and to the point. Is that what you had in your mind when you wrote it? Is that who you are? Did I get that right?
You're right. It's exactly right. Scott England had talked to me 6 or 7 times. He had asked me about writing a book on me. And I said, Scott, I don't know that anyone would want to buy a book on, you know, me, whatever I am. And I said, you know, I'm just a baritone singer singing harmony with the Oak Ridge Boys. I'm the guy that kind of fades in the shadows back there. And he said, William, I've followed you all a long time. He said, you've got a story to tell, and I'd like to help you tell it. So I said, okay. And he had talked to one of my sons, and he called me and said, Dad, Scott's here. And he said, it's time for you to write. You know, you need to talk to him. And so I said, Scott, come on down. I was down to the farm in Alabama for about a week and a half. And I said, I'm here for another few days. Do you want to come down and before I get back to Tennessee? And he said, yeah. So he and his wife came down the next day, and they talked to me. They interviewed my first wife. They interviewed my sister. I took them out in the farm where I was born and raised, and right to the spot I was born on, where the Dr. Tippin that came from Bruton out to deliver me at home. And so
Aaron Tippin's great-grandfather.
That's right.
And, isn't that great?
It is. And it was amazing when I found out that he was actually kin, that was his great-grandfather or grandfather or something. And but he did. He was a doctor in Bruton. And back then, you know, doctors for farm people, you know, they didn't they couldn't go and stay in the hospital for a week waiting on a baby, but he would, he came out and spent the night there, had a pallet they made for him, and he stayed there and delivered me the next morning when I finally did come. So, I, you know, that's the story that I heard, and I took Scott there and showed him where I came. He came to the home that I grew up in. My mother and dad built that home. We still have it. I still have it there, and my kids, and where they spent their summers. And so Scott came down. I said, Scott, you can talk to anybody that knows me, my ex-wife, my partners, my singing partners. I said, you know, our breakup, how it all went down, you can discuss these things with them. So get my side of the story, get their side too. You know, we're looking at two, they're looking through their eyes, I'm looking through my eyes. So let's get the truth here. So that's what I wanted him to get, the truth of whoever it is I am. I have a real simple background, and I learned to play music when I was real little. My sister and my mother taught me when daddy was working at the shipyard in Mobile when I was real little. And music was what lit our home up through a little battery radio. So that's where I got started.
I think that's a remarkable thing that you did, was to include various individuals who, I mean, not many people will put their ex-wife in their own book. And well, that says a lot about your journey. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on my show, because so many of the people I deal with, William Lee, are struggling with resentment and bitterness, right, and unforgiveness. They find themselves in a situation where they're taking care of a family member, but the other family members aren't helping, or they're mad at themselves, they're mad at God, they're mad, you know, whatever. And right, one of the goals that I have for myself and my fellow caregivers is that one day, you know, when we do stand at a grave, and hopefully I'm the one standing, I don't want my wife to have to go through what she goes through without me there, but we'll stand there without clenched fists. And how do we do that? What does that look like? And you've had some things in your life where I've seen people be consumed with bitterness over far less than what you dealt with. Some of it, your own right, mistakes, some of it, others that whatever, but I've seen people be consumed with bitterness. And there's a scene in the book where you went down to Bruton after a particularly difficult time, and you brought some trees back up to your place in Sumner County. And you right, planted those trees, and with every tree you planted, you also buried a grudge there. Talk about that a right, little bit, William. Why was that important? What did you get out of that? And how is something that we can adapt in our lives that you learned from that?
It was a time when I lost my father, and I planted some trees there at home too, you know, on the farm. And but I brought a poplar tree here, and I brought magnolia trees, and brought some pine trees. And yeah, grudges are something you can't carry. If you carry grudges around, it's like carrying a big vat of acid. You dip a little here, you dip a little there, and the first thing you know, it spills on you. So you get eat up with your own grudge if you're not careful. So it's something you can't be carrying with you. Grudges are things you got to leave somewhere behind. Everyone has to, you know, if we ever want forgiveness, sometimes it's, are we a forgiving person? Truly, are we? And you know, are we or not? And we have to answer those questions ourselves. And are we honest with ourselves? Are we deceiving ourselves? That's another question that people need to ask themselves. You know, when we're looking at the mirror, are we looking at the mirror of the guy that is closing the door on his future? Is he blaming everybody else for where he's at today when he's not happy and down? And do we see the real guy, or are we again deceiving ourselves, trying to be what we think everybody else wants us to be, but yet we're not being who we are? And you know, it's
as you were planting those trees, when you you finished your last tree and you knew you had planted those grudges with the trees. You said, I'm done with this. I'm not going to carry this anymore.
Yeah.
What did you feel like?
It's hey, you lift the burden off of you of a grudge. A grudge is heavier on you really than it is anybody else that you're holding against. You're the one holding it. You're not giving it away. You're holding it. So why hold it? If it hurts you in the beginning, why are you still holding on to it? Let it go. We all wake up every day as a new day to be who we are today. You know, yesterday is yesterday. Today is a brand new day. And we don't live on yesterday's laurels. Today we got to prove, are we what we thought we were? Can we do what I have to activate myself every day. I do exercise. I go on walking. I feed the deer around here. There's a lot of things that I do every day, but I'm active and I go on long walks. At my age, if I don't activate myself, I sit around and start getting negative. And to me, to step away from it and go take your steps to get away from it, puts you in a positive mood. I do 150 sit-ups a day, and I've done it for a while. And I did it mainly on the road when I was singing, because it helps get your diaphragm building, gets your breath going. And anyhow, you got to motivate yourself to walk away from negative things. And when you go on a walk, you're actually putting your own system in a positive mood. We're made to walk. We're made to be active. If we're fortunate, if God made us whole, then we're made to be active and to walk. You know, the push button world with the automobiles and things that came in the past 100 years or so. So we're all accustomizing to how fast the world is moving. And sometimes we lose touch of reality in the process of we get distracted on too many things that take us away from what our true purpose is. And you know that in the work you're in.
One of the reasons we moved out to where we are now, we left the city and we moved way out here in the wilderness of Montana. We're backed up to national forests. And so I'll periodically just treat myself to a walk in the middle of the day, you know, at lunchtime or something, just to clear my head. And I get that. And walking's free, by the way. Walking and sit-ups are free. They don't cost a dime.
You don't have to go to a gym to get it. It's all free.
Sometimes I will cheat and get on a horse. Churchill used to say, there's nothing wrong with the inside of a man that the outside of a horse can't fix. And, I would concur with that. Hey, by the way, this is a totally separate thing here. You got into art for a lengthy period of time, but then you switched over to photography. And that's a story that people need to read on what happened with that. Are you familiar with a lot of Western artists?
Remington and people like that are modern day.
What about a guy named Zabel? Did you ever know a guy named Larry Zabel? Well, he lived right across the dirt road from us. And that's one of his paintings behind me there. It's called Dog Tired, and the cowboy's carrying the dog on his saddle with him. And I didn't know if you knew him or not, but
it looks kind of like a Remington. It has that Remington style.
Well, he is a wonderful Western artist. They got a huge thing he did down at Yellowstone out at the lodge, and just a prolific artist from that settled and retired in this area and kept painting. But he lived right across the road, just a great friend, Zabel. If you ever get a chance to look him up, and it's he passed away a couple of years ago. Just a wonderful artist. I started following you on social media with your pictures that you were taking, and I remember the first time you liked one of the pictures I put out of Montana, and I was like, "William Lee liked this," you know, because every day out here is a but you fell in love with this country. You've put, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of miles on you, and you've seen this country. And I wrote an article about America. When we moved out here, it said America's more beautiful than the politicians in Washington, D.C. understand. And if people got outside of this and saw America, you guys have seen America in ways that very few people have. Would you talk a little bit about what happened with you guys when you went with Roy Clark to the Soviet Union and then where we are now? Because I think there's important life lessons people need to hear from.
Okay. It's you ask, I tell you. What I saw and learned, what I saw and learned in the Soviet Union, and I'm a farm kid growing up in South Alabama, but what you see over there, no one owns a farm, no one owns a house, no one owns a car, no one owns a refrigerator in your home, no one owns anything. The government owns everything. And communism, the government owns everything, and he owns every person. And if you don't agree with them, you're eliminated in one way or the other. And so communism is they take all of your freedoms, not just part of your freedoms. And so that's what we saw there. And what's happening here is there's a whole side of our political spectrum that certainly coddles that type of thing, that government is supposed to replace God, is replace your churches, because they don't want that 10% going there. The government wants to own all of your money, all of your everything, your home, your car. And if you don't like it, because, you know, these people told us, we were there. They said, hey, you can, if you need a new refrigerator, you can apply for it, but it may be, it's according to how far up in the Communist Party you are, who all you've helped hatch it before, if you get it quick or not, because you can be on a waiting list. It could be 3 to 5 years just to get a refrigerator that's not working. And so that's, you have to apply for everything. You cannot leave Nashville and go to Montana without you tell a government official exactly why you're going there and who you're going to see while you're there. And, purpose of that, and it's the total control of the person, the mind, the body, their everything. And you know, I may not have anything, but I have my freedom of speech, I have the freedom of mind. So far I can tell you what I think. You know, we're on a freedom of speech here place, but there's a lot of people that don't want to hear that in the. But that's what I saw in Russia. I saw what communism is, and I found out what communism is. Communism is a scourge on society.
And yet we have in this great nation, and I know how you guys at the Oaks feel about this country, and I know how your fans feel about this country, and this great nation, we have people now screaming for the very thing that you saw you were just aghast by it when the KGB came busting into they wanted you to change the lyrics of your song. And we got people wanting us to do that now, changing songs and changing TV shows and getting rid of stuff and all that. And it's heartbreaking to see this. And I see people pushing back on it. I wonder if we've been asleep at the wheel for too long though.
I think people have been asleep. This country, they don't know the truth about what the other side is, what they're flirting with. They're flirting with disaster. And it's exactly what it is from my point of view. And I'm just a guy. And it's not that I'm a selfish guy. I'm a giving person. You give your time. You give your whatever it is you have that you can share. But people don't ask me these questions that you're asking me about what I saw, what I see here, and what I saw there. But that's exactly, and I've not discussed this with anybody other than my friends, but you're the only person in a public forum that's asked that question.
Well, and it's my show, and I want to ask. And I'm not going to be censored because I love. I love this country, and I'm deeply concerned about what's happening. And I listen to these people crying out for things that they have no concept of what this is going to mean for them. And if we don't stand up and say something, then that's on me. I can't change it by myself, but I can be responsible to say something. And so I am. And I was really struck. I mean, I was just a kid when you and the Oaks and Roy Clark went over there, which in of itself is an extraordinary event that you guys even went back in the 70s, because people have no concept today of what it was like back in the 70s in Russia, in the Soviet Union. In fact, we got people today don't even know what the Soviet Union even means.
Right. And it was the Iron Curtain. Soviet Union was the ultimate socialist, the United Socialist, whatever, I forget, but it was socialism, total socialism and communism. And what happens with communism, they finally run out of people to rob, so then they want to rob their neighbor and turn them into it. They want to bully them and kill them and take their wealth. And that's where communism is. They've run out. They rob. They have no one else to rob in their own country, so then they want to rob their neighbors. So that's feeding of evil to me.
I look at the way this country was founded. It came so much out of the Reformation back with Martin Luther and these others who recognized that men cannot be the final authority on their lives and on society. We have to have an authority greater than our own opinion, which is God's word, which is our faith in God. And that cursed over, C-O-U-R-S, coursed over the northern part of Europe and into Great Britain and down into our country. But so many other countries said, no, we can figure this out ourselves. We can't figure this out ourselves. That's why we need God. We were never intended to figure it out ourselves. And when you get communism and socialism, the first thing they want to do is get rid of anything that has an authority greater than the state.
Right.
And I don't answer to the state. I answer to Almighty God. Concerned about.
You're right. It's without God in it, none of us would be here. I mean, it's... If you walk out your door, if you can't believe in God, then you're not looking for it. So that's the whole deal.
Well, I walked out the other night to walk the dogs, and it was nighttime out here. And, you know, there's a reason they call it Big Sky out here. And yeah, I looked at the stars, and we live at 6,000 feet and going up. And I looked at the stars, and there were so many of them. I felt like I just reach up and grab them. And, you know, that's when you go into, oh, Lord, my God. When I am awesome wonder, consider all the world. You can't help it. So your whole, then sings my soul. How many times have you sung How Great Thou Art in your life? How many?
I'm not sure. No, I wouldn't have any idea. But it's still one of the great songs. It's the reason it's How Great Thou Art. It's oh Lord, my God. So it starts off with a great, you're speaking to the creator. So.
My wife can't walk very well because she's got two prosthetic legs and all of her stuff going on, but she could snowmobile. She could sit and she'll ride that. And I took her out in the forest one time and we were out on the snowmobiles and I turned the sleds off and there was nobody out there but us. I mean, we're pretty remote and we're way back in this snow-covered wilderness. And Gracie's a wonderful singer and she just lifted her hands and she just sang that. Then sings my soul, my Savior God to thee. And you could just hear it reverberate around in these snow-covered where we were. I mean, it was just one of those kind of moments that I thought, man, it doesn't get any better than this right here.
I'm telling you.
I just love that. I'm going to take a quick break here. We're talking with William Lee Golden. His new book is called Behind the Beard. It's a fabulous book. You've known him. He's one of the most recognizable individuals in all the entertainment business. We'll be right back.
Peter Rosenberger, he's not a preacher, but he's got great hair.
Hey, this is Peter Rosenberger, and in my three and a half decades as a caregiver, I have spent my share of nights in a hospital, sleeping in waiting rooms on fold-out cots, chairs, even the floor, sometimes on sofas and a few times in the doghouse, but let's don't talk about that. As caregivers, we have to sleep at uncomfortable places, but we don't have to be miserable. We use pillows from MyPillow.com. These things are great. They have a patented interlocking feel that adjusts to your individual sleep needs, and for caregivers trying to sleep in all the different places we have to sleep, believe me, our needs get ramped up significantly. Think about how clean your pillows are. In the COVID world, we're all fanatical about clean. Can you wash your pillows? With my pillows from MyPillow.com, we throw them in the washer and dryer. We do it all the time. 10-year warranty, guaranteed not to go flat. 60-day money-back guarantee, made in the USA. As a caregiver, you need rest. So start by going to MyPillow.com, type in the promo code CAREGIVER. You get 50% off the 4-pack, which includes 2 premium pillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. You'll also receive a discount on anything else on the website when using your promo code CAREGIVER. That's MyPillow.com, promo code CAREGIVER.
Have you ever struggled to trust God when lousy things happen to you? I have. I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and in 1983, I experienced a horrific car accident leading to 80 surgeries and both legs amputated. I questioned why God allowed something so brutal to happen to me. But over time, my questions changed, and I discovered courage to trust God. That understanding, along with an appreciation for quality prosthetic limbs, led me to establish Standing with Hope. For more than a dozen years, we've been working with the government of Ghana and West Africa, equipping and training local workers to build and maintain quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. On a regular basis, we purchase and ship equipment and supplies. And with the help of inmates in a Tennessee prison, we also recycle parts from donated limbs. All of this is to point others to Christ, the source of my hope and strength. Please visit standingwithhope.com to learn more and participate in lifting others up. That's standingwithhope.com. I'm Gracie, and I am Standing with Hope.
I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold. I'd rather be his than have riches untold. I'd rather have Jesus than houses or land. I'd rather be led by his nail-pierced hand than to be the king of the land.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a family caregiver. How do we face these things? How do we deal with the things down in our soul? If our soul is troubled, if our hearts are a train wreck, guess what? Our wallets, our relationships, our everything about us, our careers, our bodies will be train wrecks as well. It starts on a heart level, on a soul level. And I look for folks who can help me see this better so that I can be strong and healthy as I take care of someone who is not. One of those individuals is William Lee Golden. I just finished his book, Behind the Beard. And it is an extraordinary tale of someone who has faced some very difficult things and lived to write about it, but not in a way that is self-promoting, but is matter of fact, here are some principles that I want to make sure are written down before I leave this earth kind of thing. And that's what I got the feeling of this. And William Lee, when I was reading this, I was telling this to Kathy Harris yesterday, who's worked with you guys for a long time. And one of the things that I got out of this was that William Lee does not appear to be a man who was striving with anything other than himself, and he's made peace with himself. That's what I got out of this. Did I read that right?
You did. So, you know, you have to compete with yourself. You got to also motivate yourself to be the best you can. And it's like at our age, our business, singing and touring is not the easiest thing on people's life. And, you know, you got to pace yourself. You got to know when it's time to get your rest, and you got to know when it's time to get ready to go and pump yourself up and be ready. And we talked about earlier here, you know, it's like routines of working out, doing sit-ups, things, going on walks, but be ready and to sing. And that's what I do. But we have to motivate ourselves to activate ourselves in whatever it is we choose to do. And at my age, I have to do that to get in a positive mood, to get to start the day right.
There's one scene in the book that you motivated yourself to do something quite extraordinary, and that was to reconcile and make a sincere effort with Fro Jean.
Right.
It was a very emotional part of the book. Nobody accidentally asks for forgiveness. That's something you do with intention and with sincerity. You're trying to make amends. Now, forgiveness doesn't mean it doesn't matter, but it does mean you're going to take your hands off of someone else's throat and give them the opportunity to do the same with you, if possible. I can't make somebody forgive me. Their choice, whether I even know I offended them or not. But in this case, you did know. You knew you had some unfinished business, and she was facing some very difficult things herself, and you did this. Talk about that moment.
I'm thankful that my wife, my current wife, Simone, my fourth wife, I was unfaithful to Fro Jean, and unfaithful with someone she knew, was a friend of hers, and I fell in love with her friend too. And over a period of time, Fro Jean found out about it and confronted me and confronted her friend, someone had told her. But there's a lot of stories behind all of that. But Simone, my wife, we've been together. We've soon be 6 years. We've been married. We were together for a couple of years before that. And but Simone asked me, knowing my past, and had I ever apologized for Fro Jean for being unfaithful to her when she didn't do anything to deserve it? And I thought, and I said, no, I don't think I did, because she divorced me and I accepted. I didn't even go to the divorce, you know. I didn't have a lawyer. I couldn't afford a lawyer. So I didn't apologize. So she said, well, don't you think it's time? I said, when are you going to ever do that? I said, well, I don't know. So she would ask me every 6 or 8 months. So finally, 2-3 years ago, I guess, on Thanksgiving, Chris invited us all to his house, my son, my third son. And his mother was there, Fro Jean. And he invited Simone and I over, and we went over. I'd been thinking of, you know, doing what Simone had been encouraging me to do. And we were there, and I thought to myself, well, this is the time I'll do it. And I didn't tell anybody I was going to do it. But at the end of lunch, Thanksgiving lunch, before everyone was getting up, starting to leave, I said, I'd like to say something. I said, Fro Jean, Simone has questioned me and has asked me repeatedly why I didn't ever apologize to you for my unfaithfulness when you didn't do anything to deserve it. And I said, I want to take this opportunity to apologize to you. So he accepted it. She said, William, I forgave you a long time ago. I had to forgive you to move forward. And she said, but I appreciate you taking the time to do it now. And this was before, a year before we found out that she found out, or any of us knew, that she had pancreatic cancer the following year. But yet she lived almost a year after that. And so we got time to spend more time on visitations. And my sons, it was during the pandemic when they were all able to come home from their solo careers and spend time with their mother. And my three sons, older sons, they were able to be with their mother, all three of them, basically all time until she passed. And I would visit her and them occasionally, because I was planning a big musical project with my sons that I'd had a vision of doing for about 2 or 3 years. And so I was sharing with them what my plans were. But we waited until the timing was right, and until after her passing and the time of grieving that my sons and the family was going through. And but we got together and started making music, me and my sons, after that. And coming here at home, we were all sheltered down, and we started singing songs and harmonizing. And they're incredible musicians. And we left from here and went to the studio a few days later and said, hey, let's record this. This is fun. So we started recording songs, me and my sons. And we was playing songs and invited a couple of other people to come record with us. We wound up recording 32 songs over about 6 week period of time there. And we did a full gospel album, an old tradition. I took them back to my childhood, the songs that I started with. We did three projects. I've started and finished five major projects in the past 12 months. The book is the one that's out now. And the Oak Ridge Boys new album, Front Porch Singing, is out now. But the three projects I've done with my sons after their mother passed, that we were doing pre-production on before she passed, but to getting the songs together. But yeah, those things will be coming later summer and the fall. But that was a healing, mentally, emotionally.
Do you think the music reflects that healing that took place at that dinner because you didn't do it privately, you did it right in front of everybody.
Yes, it was.
Did it change your relationship with your sons? Or deepen it? Not change it, but deepen it.
It's deepened our relationship, I think. And, you know, I stood by their side and went with them during the funeral and the graveside with my sons. It's their mother, and it's the very least I could do. It was a sad time for everyone. You don't lose. If you ever love someone, you always love them. I feel like if you truly love someone, especially someone that you share children with. And but it's, we had a healing. We sang old songs that I grew up on that I found comfort because I lost my mother. We sang old gospel songs like If I Could Hear My Mother Pray Again. They're old country gospel songs. And but we did. We did a whole 12 songs of gospel music before we went into old traditional songs that I grew up with from my childhood, of old country songs that I was singing as a kid and playing. And anyhow, it's been a mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual healing. The spiritual healing was the first to happen with us. We cut the gospel album first. We had to go back and get our spirits healed or filled in the beginning of this. That's where we went first, is all the old gospel songs. From that, we evolved into the old country songs, the love songs, they ended up. And then my sons, we all sang songs that I invited them to come and sing songs from their childhood. I take them to all these rock and roll concerts, different music, whatever, great entertainment I'd take my kids to it growing up, my sons. And so they wanted songs that they grew up singing then. It became a thing that we all found healing. It was a time when we were sheltered, when our faith had been, the government tried to shut our faith down. And they closed the churches. So we had spiritual healing at home around the piano, singing old songs that our mothers sang for us. And that's where it started with our healing. At home here, singing around the piano. We went in the studio and recreated. And we kept singing the old songs that we were singing at home. We'd go that week and record them in the studio. And so through that and harmonizing together, we have found the mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual healing.
on my live show that I do every week, I take a hymn and I usually play it at the beginning. I call it the caregiver keyboard, and I step over here. But I try to go through these songs, the hymnal, and introduce them to people maybe who don't know them or have forgotten them, and explain to them the richness they have, the music that can hear. Sometimes there's an old quote I love by Hans Christian Andersen. He said, when words fail, music speaks. There have been times where words have failed you and me and anybody that's lived any kind of life, but music will speak to us in ways that is beyond that. I think about, you know, how scripture says that the Holy Spirit intercedes for us and groans, and that we can't even process. And I think that's sometimes what music is for me. And there have been times when Gracie and I were in so much difficulty. There were so many different things going on. She's had 80 surgeries that I can count. And yet all we had sometimes was just to go to the piano, and I'd play and she'd sing, and we would just stumble through a song. You've done that. You understand what that's like, and the power of that, of a great hymn of the faith that sustains in those low, 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 low moments, lower than Richard Sturban's voice moments.
It is. And it's amazing. You know, it's like these old hymns. I had to get out of the house during all of this pandemic. I had to get away from television. There was more hate, violence, and anger coming. Every time you turned on TV, you change the channel, there's more hate and violence. I had to shut it off. I had to get away from it. I didn't grow up around them, so maybe I had to remove myself from where it was spewing out. And I got outside, and that's when all these songs started going, coming, flooding into me. You know, I mean, it's an old song, like I would. It started going over, and I couldn't get out of my mind. It was I went ahead and recorded it. A song called "Softly and Tenderly." Jesus is calling for you and for me. You know, it's an old,
I love that.
And but we sang songs like that, and we'd sing here around the house. So we just say, "Hey, let's go to the studio and do this." Got our friends, hey. Let's sing. Let's forget about what's out there. Took our mask off and we sang. And during our recording with my family, Ben Isaacs, with the Isaacs family, was at his studio, and he was he came down with COVID just before we started recording. So he missed his first recordings. Was helping us with the vocal arrangements. And then second thing, we got into the country stuff, more pop recordings with my sons. And Chris, my youngest son, it played drums and sings, plays mandolin, and he's a multi-talented, but he came down with COVID. And this guy, Steve Henson, that was playing steel guitar and dobro and slide guitar, he came down with COVID and found out that he was suffering what we thought was a sinus infection during the old country song recording. And as soon as the sessions were over, 2 days later, he found out that he was suffering from COVID. The doctor was treating him for sinus infection. He actually had COVID and wound up in ICU, but thank God he survived. But it's like that came through all of this, trying to distract, it seems like, but yet we kept moving forward with it.
That brings me to a point. I wanted to ask you something about, because you talk about how you keep going, you activate yourself, you push forward, you let the grudges be gone. When you were fired from the Oak Ridge Boys, and that was certainly one of the darker times in your life, you also write about how this became an opportunity that you did not count on.
Right.
With your boys, and not just with your boys, with yourself, for you to do some self-examination. I imagine you spent a lot of long walks thinking to yourself, okay, how did I get to this place? And what happened? And we're all going to experience moments where we just get kicked in the groin.
Right.
It's going to happen. But what we do with it, where we see it go, is the challenge. You saw an opportunity. You discovered an unexpected opportunity through one of the darker, more public events in your life. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it was time that my partners, the guys that I had actually hired, stood up for to make sure that I got them into the group when it was a time for personnel, when one guy would be leaving and you're got to replace this position here. It was people that I had brought into the mix. It had stunned me and shocked me, and it don't matter how bad things can get sometimes, you have to look for positive things that come out of bad situations. So sometimes they get maybe some good thing if you can go ahead and get there. It gave me an opportunity to spend time with my sons that I felt at a time. They were young men then, and it had bothered me that I missed out on, because they were young. They were young teenagers when their mother divorced me. And so I missed, and I was on the road 200, 250 days a year away from them. And I felt like that there were things as men that I needed to spend time with them. And the only way they know who I am and what I am as a man is to be together. So we got together and started making music together. And I was pushing them and their talent, and they would play and sing and back me up, sing songs that I wanted to sing. And so we went out and toured, playing, you know, wherever we could play, any way we could sing and stay together and make music. That's where we found. And it brought us closer as a family, and was able to, my sons, to at least see how I survive in the world that I've chosen to do, of pursuing a musical career and trying to have a creative way to express yourself through music and songs. And since I don't write songs, I had to, you know, you've got to depend on the great writers and inspired to write great songs. But it was time to spend with my sons. And I feel like that was a valuable time in all of our lives. And then after a period of time, the Oak Ridge Boys were going through some difficult times. Understood. I didn't go see them or disturb them while I was away. Let them have it, what they wanted. It was... Anyhow, that's a whole nother story. A lot of that's in the book, but
you covered that in the book. But, yeah. But I think that the lesson was that I got out of it, and I think this is the lesson you wanted to convey, is that, yeah, we're going to have these moments where it just gets ugly. And yeah. We can sit around and be bitter about it. We can just go back to those whole things with grudges, or we can use this as an opportunity to grow as a person. You know, I look at myself and my life and the people that I'm trying to reach on this show. I know people who are dealing with very painful, and it is very uncomfortable. And they can use this as an opportunity to rail out and to just walk around with their grinding teeth. Or they can say, you know what? Is there beauty and joy even in this? And I read about cases in the Holocaust where people were in concentration camps, and they were able to see beauty and joy even in that. You know, and so that's what I wanted for myself. And I wanted to share with listeners that, you know what, you can be as miserable or as happy as you choose to be. And we don't have to be all bent out of shape. And yeah, things are going to happen. But when the reconciliation came with you in the Oaks, it was a serious moment of great reflection, where you're just saying to each other, you know what, we have grown as individuals. And it changed everything with you guys, didn't it?
It does. You know, I had the same amount of gold records on my wall as they had. I had success when I was away from them. They kept going when I was not there. but we still all had the same amount of gold records on our wall. And today we still have the same amount. So the people were the ones that made those gold records. They're the ones that created the gold records. It wasn't us. We didn't create them. It was the songs we did that they chose to deserve that. So that's what people want to hear. They want to hear the original deal, not a tribute guy that's trying to tribute to the real deal. You know what I mean? They want to see the real bands rather than the tribute bands. Not that tribute bands can't make a living, but
no, I get that. But I think that what I got out of your book was when the tribute moment ended for the Oaks and the real band got back together, it was more than just the real band getting back together. The real band had gone through some real self-discovery at the same time.
Right. I think so.
And
they realized the,
and that seemed to make it better.
They realized the importance of the four ingredients. You know, it's I feel like that's what maybe I did. I knew then what the importance of the four different ingredients was, because it brought four different, each one had their own appeal to a different part of the audience. And so the whole of that made a much bigger audience. If you're only taking one guy, then he appeals to these people. Well, then those are the people that might come see you if you back whenever with whoever. So yeah, we all are individual, but that was the secret of the Oak Ridge Boys. It was the country and city combined, the North, the South. You know, the two of us country guys, Joe grew up in Philadelphia and Richard grew up in Camden, New Jersey, across the river from where Joe did. And I grew up out in the country in the middle of where neighbors were half a mile or a mile away. And Dwayne grew up out in the country. So it's those. Oh,
by the way, I got to tell you something. This is a little inside information on Dwayne. I was in the car with my mother-in-law the other day. My wife's aunt, my mother-in-law's sister, dated Dwayne way back, long time ago. Enough that she actually brought him home one time. And my mother-in-law said, Daddy looked at Dottie. Her name was Dottie. He said, why are you going to date that fella? He said, he's in a quartet. Where's he going to go? And I thought, now my wife's grandfather was quite a character. So he couldn't read success on somebody very well. But that was a funny story that she did. I don't know how many times they dated. I wanted to end up with something here with you. You've done more shows than you can remember, and that you've had big moments that you can remember. But I think for me, one of the more poignant moments of your career that I've observed was the four of you at George Herbert Walker Bush's funeral. And you guys had to fly through the night to get there. I remember seeing that on the news talking about it. And yet you stood there at the funeral service for this man. And I had the privilege of meeting him a time or two, but you guys were very close friends. What was that like for you? I know it's crazy. You got, you know, Secret Service and everything else and security and all the cameras over, but still, there had to have been that moment of reflection that I am from Brewton, Alabama, and I'm standing here and I'm seeing Amazing Grace for a man who will be forever in history. You know, I mean, it had to have been kind of a surreal moment for you, wasn't it?
It is. It's, our friendship with them, again, it was through music. He was a fan of our music, and we did a White House lawn party or barbecue for President Reagan when he was vice president. And he come running across the lawn before we was there in the afternoon doing a sound check for that evening. And we were singing some songs, see how the sound is going to sound. And here come Vice President Bush, and he run across there with T-shirts to give to each guy. And he was telling us he was a big fan of our music. And he requested two or three songs for us to sing while we was doing a sound check. And they were all album cut songs, you know, so we knew that he knew more about our music than just what he was hearing on radio. So we sang those songs for him. And anyhow, that started our relationship. He had to go somewhere else that night, but it was a barbecue for all the Democrats and Republicans to come together and forget about politics for a night. And so we had fun and sang country music, eat barbecue. And that started a friendship that lasted for 30 something years, I guess. Every year, George and Barbara Bush would invite the Oak Ridge Boys up to their home, and our wives, the four guys and our wives, to come and spend 3 days with them and, in their home. And each time you'd go, they'd want you to stay in this room. This time you stayed in this one last time, so we're going to put you over here this time with this view. And they would, they kept up with everything that we where we stayed last time. And so it was always fun, but, you know, I didn't know until then that presidents aren't allowed to drive cars after they become president. So, yet they're allowed to drive boats. So he had a speedboat, and he loved to get out in that boat and get us on it and then take us out for a ride. And we did it every day, sometimes a couple of times a day. But at lunch, before lunch, he'd take you out for a ride, and then he'd make, say, we'll meet him back in a restaurant a year later. So there was certain restaurants you could go and park the boat at. The Secret Service was always following in their boat. But we were friends, and we shared a lot of times together out on the boat and just sitting around the house. And usually the nights before we were leaving the next day, they would get us to sing. Sometimes it'd be a cappella, sometimes maybe use a little soundtrack or something to on a certain song. And on occasions, they'd invite friends of theirs over to their home, different politicians or people that you've, you know, from different parties. They had people, Democrats and Republicans, that they were. It was they had friends, you know, in all parties. They were great people. It's about America. It wasn't all about party. So it's America. Anyhow, to be standing there at the funeral in Houston at a time like that, we flew all night from Spokane, Washington on a private plane to be there and to pay our respects and to sing his favorite song. We sang Amazing Grace at his funeral because that's what he always wanted us to sing. And but you're singing it and you're realizing the gravity of it, because you look out there and there's George W. and there's Neil and Jeb and the whole family, and then there's world dignitaries are all over the place. And but you're sitting there, but you feel it's surreal because you're singing it with all the memories, and you're realizing that you're getting to sing it probably for your last time for him. And so it was it's a touching and an emotional time that then, and to reflect back on it, it reminds me of that. And so thank you for asking that question.
I remember watching it, and yeah. I had just interviewed Joe not terribly long before that. He's been on my show a time or two, and I was watching it, and I knew the emotions had to be thick. And you know, you don't do something like that without recognizing the somberness of it, not just for a funeral, but who this was on the stage of history, and that here you were. And I was really quite moved by what you guys did, and the way you stood there and represented so many of us who would have liked to have done that for them, not because of we want to be on the stage, but because when you have that kind of, I've met the man just a few times, but what I found in him was a decent, kind, caring man. When you see somebody like that, who's a decent man in an indecent world, and
right.
you want to pour out devotion for that life of love that you have for him. And you guys represented a lot of us doing that. And I was very, very moved by that. You did something in the book, and I will close up with this. The last bit of your book, the last line in your book, in fact, I have it right here. I'm going to read it. There's actually two lines that I loved on the last page of your part. It said, we all grow. We try to learn from our mistakes. If I've learned from every mistake I've ever made, I must be the smartest man on earth, which I thought, I laughed out loud at that one. But here's the last line of the book. And I'm not giving anything away, I don't think. This is not a spoiler, but thank you for taking the time to get to know the man behind the beard. And thank you for your friendship and support through the years. Love and God bless you, WLG. Only a man who has sung in front of millions and millions of people and done as many shows as you have would understand the importance of thanking people at the end for being at the show, for reading it. There was such humility there. You love your fans. You love the people you sing for, and that comes through. And I was really quite moved by that. And I got one last question. If there was one song, one gospel song, one song, one hymn that you would look at as something that you would want people every time they whistle that song or sing it, you know, that would be a song that meant something to you. Is there one particular that stands out to you?
Well, I was fortunate to get to sing a song in 1982 that was a song that is on our first Christmas album. Eddie Raven came in and said, "Guys, this is not a real Christmas song, but I think it fits what you're doing here." And he said, "I wrote this 7 or 8 years ago," and said, "I had it on an album 7 years ago," said, "but I still think it fits what you're doing." It's a song called "Thank God for Kids." And the line says, "If it weren't for kids, have you ever thought there wouldn't be no Santa Claus? Or look what the store just brought. Thank God for kids." So the Santa Claus line is the only thing that referred to Christmas in there. But the song was released as a Christmas album. Christmas came and went. The song kept going up the charts. And I think it was late in January or first part of February, it went to a number one country song. But the song still, of all the times I've cut it, it was right after it was released, I became a grandfather for the first time. So it takes on a different meaning. And then through the years, I became a father again. And then I've become a grandfather 7 times now and a great grandfather 3 times. So the song keeps taking on more meaning as I get older.
If it weren't for kids, have you ever thought there wouldn't be no Santa Claus? Or look what the store just broke. Thank God for kids. And we'd all live in a quiet house without Big Bird or a Mickey Mouse and Kool-Aid on the couch. Thank God for kids. Thank God for kids, there's magic for a while. A special kind of sunshine and a smile.
This has been a great time. William Lee, I appreciate you giving me a little extra time today, and I want you to know how much I appreciate it. This has been a treat. Again, the reason I did this today, I wanted to take a little bit of a deviation from what I normally talk about. I think caregivers need to hear from just different sources of people who have faced difficulties. I think sometimes we get so myopic in our own, and it's so important for us to kind of step out of ourselves for a little bit and learn from someone else's journey. I learned from yours. I learned the importance of letting go of things. I've learned the importance of learning to make peace with yourself and be at peace with yourself. And I've learned that, you know, you can find great beauty and joy and opportunity, even in the midst of heartache. Those are life lessons that apply all the way across the board. And you've been a real treat to talk with today. And so I thank you very, very much.
Well, Peter, hopefully one day we'll get to come back, talk again. And maybe after some of this music I've been making with my sons comes out later in the summer, the fall, maybe we can sit again. So I've enjoyed
any time.
Thank you for.
And I'm trying to get you guys. I'm trying to get the Oaks out here to Southwest Montana.
And, we were out that way recently in Montana. So we.
Yeah, but Montana's a big place. It's we drove 2.5 hours one way to dinner the other night.
Wow.
You know, and the difference between Tennessee and Montana. Is in Tennessee, we think 100 miles is a long ways. In Montana, they think 100 years is a long time.
100 years ain't that long. My daddy said, man, 100 years ain't long to be here because it flies so fast, you know. And at my age, hey, it didn't take long to get here to me.
Well,
I still got a long ways to go.
And it's nothing compared to what we're going to do when we've been there 10,000 years, bright, shining as the sun. We've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first began. And that's a great way to end this on.
Well, thank you again, Peter. And it's been a joy here today. I've enjoyed this as much as any I've done.
We're going to end this show with the performance of the Oak Ridge Boys at the funeral service of President George H.W. Bush, Amazing Grace.
When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the
Some of you know the remarkable story of Peter's wife, Gracie, and recently Peter talked to Gracie about all the wonderful things that have emerged from her difficult journey. Take a listen.
Gracie, when you envisioned doing a prosthetic limb outreach, did you ever think that inmates would help you do that?
Not in a million years.
When you go to the facility run by CoreCivic and you see the faces of these inmates that are working on prosthetic limbs that you have helped collect from all over the country that you put out the plea for, and they're disassembling. You see all these legs, like what you have, your own prosthetic
and
legs.
And arms.
And arms. When you see all this, what does that do to you?
Makes me cry because I see the smiles on their faces, and I know what it is to be locked someplace where you can't get out without somebody else allowing you to get out. Of course, being in the hospital so much and so long. And so these men are so glad that they get to be doing, as one man said, something good finally with my hands.
Did you know before you became an amputee that parts of prosthetic limbs could be recycled?
No, I had no idea. You know, I thought of peg leg. I thought of wooden legs. I never thought of titanium and carbon legs and flex feet and sea legs and all that. I never thought about that.
As you watch these inmates participate in something like this, knowing that they're helping other people now walk, they're providing the means for these supplies to get over there, what does that do to you just on a heart level?
I wish I could explain to the world what I see in there. And I wish that I could be able to go and say, this guy right here, he needs to go to Africa with us. I never not feel that way. Every time, you know, you always make me have to leave. I don't want to leave them. I feel like I'm at home with them, and I feel like that we have a common bond. that I would have never expected that only God could put together.
Now that you've had an experience with it, what do you think of the faith-based programs that Core Civic offers?
I think they're just absolutely awesome. And I think every prison out there should have faith-based programs like this, because the return rate of the men that are involved in this particular faith-based program and other ones like it, but I know about this one, is just an amazingly low rate compared to those who don't have them. And I think that that says so much. That doesn't have anything to do with me. It just has something to do with God using somebody broken to help other broken people.
If people want to donate a used prosthetic limb, whether from a loved one who passed away or, you know, somebody who outgrew them, you've donated some of your own for them to do. How do they do that? Where do they find it?
Please go to standingwithhope.com/recycle. standingwithhope.com/recycle.
Thanks, Gracie.
My hand.